Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
The School of Hard Knocks. We've all probably heard of that. Many of us feel like we probably graduated from the School of Hard Knocks. Good morning. I'm Eddie Mayfield. This is Driven to Business. We're going to talk today about success through adversity, which is something that I think is often overlooked. I was thinking of a passage out of the New Testament, the book of James, that said to count it all joy when you encounter various trials, because the testing of your faith produces endurance. Well, if you sort of make a business thing out of that, the testing, trials do sort of test you a bit, and they do produce endurance. And I would almost say that without trials and testing, you probably are not going to have any endurance. I had a good friend here. This moved. He's retired now, but he for a long time was the head of training for a local police department here in Georgia. And we were talking about that when new recruits came in, they would have to learn how to fight. Of course, you'd spend a little time in self-defense. And he said, you know, a lot of these new recruits coming in had never in their life been punched in the face before. And consequently, they didn't know how to respond to it. And, you know, a policeman, as we are sometimes reminded here recently with all that going on, you know, with some of the attacks on policemen, policemen don't get to lose fights. You know, if you're in a fight as a policeman, you can't lose that fight. And it doesn't mean if somebody punches you, you keep going. And that's something that they try to teach new recruits. Well, even in business, I think it's important that we learn to keep going when we've been punched. And if you haven't been punched in business yet and you have any sort of a leadership position or a founder of a business or anything like that, you will be. You're going to get punched really hard one time. And how you respond to that will have a lot to do with your ultimate success, because, you know, everybody has to learn how to deal with adversity. You know, even in a technical sense, as I look back over my career and even in learning technical expertise and how to work on electronic motor drives and things of that sort, my best learning experiences were the nights that I spent all night under a lot of pressure in front of a machine somewhere in an industrial plant with a lot of pressure on me. And you finally get it going. And those are the learning times. That's where you grow. You learn a couple of things. You learn how to deal with the technical part of it. You also learn how to deal with a lot of customer pressure on your back and how to handle it. And coming out of that, it was not very enjoyable while in it, but coming out of it and after it's over with, you learned a lot from it, or at least that's the way you should look at failure. That's the way you should look at testing. And that wasn't necessarily a failure, but you know, even if you have a failure in business, and we've had a number in our company that everything we do doesn't turn out to be a success. Every business venture doesn't work. We've had several that did not. And we're going to talk today about some folks that were very successful in business, but in their early years, they experienced failure. And again, it's just part of life. We have to learn to deal with failures. You know, even in the area of dealing with personnel, some of the most frustrating things I've ever done after starting a business, and I thought before I started a business and began hiring people, I had helped run a business for another guy, and I thought I knew how to do all this. But once you have your own employees, the frustrations you can run into in dealing with people, and I didn't always deal with them very well, just to be honest about it. That could be a whole other program. But I did learn from some of my real failures in that business, and some of the getting knocked down and getting back up and figuring out what you did wrong, how you handled that wrong, maybe how you hired wrong, maybe how you fired wrong in a lot of ways. But you learn from those things, and you pick yourself up, and you move forward through them. And that is how we learn. In the sales and marketing area, I have made a lot of mistakes in that area. I started a number of marketing projects that just did not work and were very maddening and cost a lot of money and very expensive lessons. But, you know, if you're going to spend a lot of money and have a failure, you at least need to learn something from it and sort of do a post-mortem on that. And, you know, we do that a lot of times with projects, even in our company. If we've lost a big sale or something, we will sit down and think over where do we go wrong? What do we do wrong to lose that? And, you know, and again, that's a great healing experience in a way. and you go forward and you learn from them, and you tend to learn from mistakes. We all do that, whether we like it or whether we don't. John Maxwell, a great business leadership author, wrote a book called Failing Forward some years ago. And I've read that book a couple of times, and I think it's a great title. If you're going to fail, instead of falling backwards when you fail, at least fall forward. You've made a little bit of progress. If you get knocked down forward, and at least you've made a little progress just in going forward. And he talks about several people that are interesting. He talks about the idea that Van Gogh, the famous author Van Gogh, had flunked his entrance exam to a theology school, and then he was fired by the church after he fouled up as a missionary. And he rarely in his life experienced anything other than failure as an artist. And although a single painting for Van Gogh would sell today for a huge amount of money, millions and millions and millions of dollars, in his lifetime, Van Gogh only sold one painting. And he sold that 4 months before he died. So you can look at it as an artist. He was a failure, yet he's considered one of the greatest artists of all times. Einstein, a guy that I enjoy reading about. You know, Einstein had a lot of academic failure, was considered by many teachers to be a slow learner and somebody that really was not going to ever make it. He was actually expelled from school once for just being slow. And other teachers told him he was never going to amount to anything. He just didn't have the brain power to do it. And Einstein even failed his entrance exam to college. Amazing thing to think about, isn't it? A guy that's probably, if you think of, if you come up with the idea of genius and you say, and you're asked to name a genius, you probably name Albert Einstein. But yet Einstein, as a young man, was not considered a genius. He was considered slow and a dullard and was actually, like I said, even flunked his English, his exams. And yet here's a guy could, with almost no, without computers, with, very limited tools and resources, could postulate these incredible theories that over time have proven for the most part to be correct in his ideas of the universe. And he did it in his mind doing thought patterns. But again, Einstein, as we all know, finally became to be recognized for his genius. He was actually working at a clerical job when his first thesis actually was began to be accepted it. Not everybody accepted it even then, but a lot did. And yet, he had a lot of failure, but he kept going. And again, that's the lesson of it, isn't it? Van Gogh kept painting. Einstein kept on working on his theories, even though everyone was telling him he was a dullard and slow. But he didn't do that. He kept working. In the sports world, Michael Jordan, this is a fairly famous story. You know, Michael Jordan was cut from his sophomore basketball team. And for just not being a very good player. And yet he went home and was disappointed about it. But his parents told him just keep working at it. And, you know, Jordan, arguably the most famous basketball player ever live, probably. Again, a guy that when he was young was told he couldn't cut it and just continue to work for it. It didn't stop Van Gogh from painting. It didn't stop Albert Einstein from continuing his work, and it didn't stop Michael Jordan. Those early failures, in fact, propel them to work harder. They learn from them, and they were a success. You know, at some point, nearly all of us, at some point or another in business, every one of us are going to be tempted to think that we're a failure. When you feel like that, just understand that that's a condition common to mankind. You're going to feel that way sometimes, that you're a failure. But the people that succeed, in spite of feeling like they're failures, they still persevere. They pick it back up. They hold on to a sort of a self-belief in themselves, and they refuse to see themselves as failures. Now, Maxwell goes on to list several things, and this is actually, if you look around the internet and look at a lot of blogs on overcoming failure, what's interesting is no matter who wrote it, you will see a lot of people quoting Maxwell, and they'll just list a number of things Maxwell said. So, and we may touch on it today a little bit. But here's a couple of things that he has as principles of failing forward. The first one is is to reject rejection. You know, people that are successful have a healthy self-image. I don't mean they're arrogant. They're not arrogant at all. But they have a healthy self-image that's not dictated by external events. In other words, when you fall short somewhere, rather than labeling yourself as a failure, just learn from the mistake and pick up and go ahead and get on with that. You know, I was told, even when I was a young man, I was in an employment agency one time, and I was told after testing me and talking to me, I was told by the guy in the employment agency I needed to work a union job because I really wouldn't. I was not going to be able to qualify to make a job on my own. Now, that kind of stung a little bit as a kid, but I didn't believe him, and he was wrong. And a lot of us, we need to be careful also when we're dealing with younger people. When we label someone, we look at someone that's having a hard time in life, and we label them as a complete failure, someone that cannot be successful. We're often wrong. We're often wrong. We need to back off. And that's also why encouragement of people is so important, to encourage people, especially if you're dealing with someone that's experiencing failure in their life and experiencing some setbacks. You can make a big difference in that person's life by encouraging them to move along. So reject rejection. That's one of Maxwell's precepts. The other one is don't point fingers, or in other words, don't blame somebody else. I think this is the number one, to me, the number one determinant of whether somebody is a good leader or not is whether or not they blame other people for their failures. If you're a person, at the moment you have a shortcoming, you turn around and blame somebody else for it, you need to develop your leadership skills. That is the mark of a poor leader. It's the mark of an unsuccessful person. Unsuccessful people do that. They blame others. Without getting political in here, that annoys me to no end. When politicians will have some monumental failure in things they've done, and they immediately begin blaming other people rather than taking the blame on themselves and saying, you know, the Harry Truman thing, the buck stops here. Because as I've said here before, it's actually very empowering. If I am the problem, then I am the solution. I've had to face this in my own career a number of times. If I'm the problem, then I'm the solution. It's actually empowering. It's not self-depreciating at all. I'm the problem. Therefore, I can resolve the problem because I'm the problem. And I can do something about me. I can't do something about external forces or other people or anything else. I can do something about me. Don't blame other people for your failures. Take credit for yourself. And conversely, it's just a great leadership trait, just to throw this in here. It's a great leadership trait to give success credit to other people instead of yourself. It's a way of keeping yourself humble. It's also very good business practice if you have people working for you. When there's a success takes place in the business, give the team the credit for the success, not yourself. Don't take it yourself. Take responsibility for every failure, full responsibility for it. But yet give the accolades of success to other people. You find that's a great trait of world-famous football coaches like Nick Saban and Bear Bryant and others like that. That was one of their credos. Was it, if the team loses, it's my fault. If they win, they played well. I mean, that's just a way to encourage people and also to establish yourself as a leader that matters. You're listening to Driven to Business. By the way, streaming live on biz1190.com. The next program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. Back in just a moment. This is Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking about learning from adversity, or even perhaps being successful for adversity, or to steal a John Maxwell line, failing forward. As we started off in the first segment talking about everybody, if you do anything worthwhile in your life, you will experience setbacks, adversity, and failures. You're going to. Everything doesn't work. That's certainly my story. That's the story of anybody I know that's had any success in business or in life, is that things are going to pop you in the face once in a while. And it's how you respond to that. That's a lot to do with it. But right before the break, we were talking about a little bit of a synopsis out of Maxwell's book called Failing Forward. And, you know, he gave some principles for that. One of them was to reject rejection, meaning when people tell you you're worthless, don't believe them in that area. We got many, many stories about that, from Albert Einstein to Thomas Edison to many others that were told when they were young that they were never going to amount to anything, and they proved people wrong. So don't listen to people that tell you that, and don't tell people that either, by the way. And the second one is, don't point fingers at other people, and don't blame others for your failures. Blame yourself. Deal with your failures. Pick yourself back up. Learn from it and move forward. And the other one of the others that Maxwell talks about is seeing failure as temporary. People who tend to personalize failure, they see a problem where this is a permanent condition. I failed, and this is a permanent hole I've got myself into that I can't get out of. But successful people don't do that. Successful people see failure as temporary. They see it as a bit of a setback. You know, we're having a bad month this month. Listen, if you've been in business any amount of time at all, you haven't had a bad month yet, you're going to. You're going to have bad months. You're probably going to have a bad quarter. You could have bad years. Some people do. It's not to fold your tent and go home when you have a bad month or when something doesn't exactly go your way. It's to back up, examine it, and view the setback as a temporary setback and move forward with it. You know, not every project is going to go all that well for you. The other one that Maxwell talks about is set realistic expectations. Now, this is a pretty big deal. This is something I've had to deal with. I sometimes tend to set unrealistic expectations. I know when we first started our business, I had very, very, very high expectations for our first year's billing. Now, they were completely unrealistic, not based on any kind of empirical data. I just sort of pulled a figure out of the air and did it. Well, it was impossible to do it, as it turned out, in the business I was in. So set realistic expectations. For instance, you know, if you're trying to lose, if you haven't been exercising in 10 years and you suddenly want to get in shape, so you said, I'm going to run, in a marathon next week, that's probably not going to work. You're going to need to start lower your expectations a bit, and maybe have an expectation of, I'm going to go to the gym twice a week or something. You know, I mean, put something you can do. And also, by setting realistic expectations and setting things you can actually do, it's very empowering. That's a way of overcoming failure. Set realistic expectations so you're not just setting yourself up for failure by setting an expectation that you just can't possibly meet. Here's another big one that Maxwell talks about, and I've thought of many, many times, is focus on your strengths. You know, we very often in business sometimes, or in any organization you're part of, the tendency is, if you're not very careful, the tendency is to focus on problems, not on opportunities. Now, you can't ignore problems. Problems are there. They're real. You need to deal with them. But if you find yourself spending most of your time on problems and almost none of your time on opportunities, that's a recipe for disaster. Don't do that. So focus on strengths. And, you know, all of us have weaknesses. Maybe you're not a good public speaker. Maybe you're not good at sales. Maybe you're not good at technology. I mean, whatever. Everybody has something they're very good. They're pretty good at. They have strengths, and everybody has weaknesses. There's a real tendency, if you're not careful, to be all concerned, get overly concerned about your weaknesses. Take the opposite approach. Focus on your strengths. Do what you're good at doing, and if possible, outsource your strengths. If that's possible, to do that. That's another way of overcoming failure. Focus on your strengths. If you're playing to your weaknesses, that's more likely to get yourself into a failure. But do that. The other thing that Maxwell talks about is, he calls it varying approaches to achievement. I'm interested in this sometimes because whether you're talking about Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or many, many others you could think about, Edison, many, many others you could think about, they didn't have one clear path to success. They had a lot of paths to success. And by having those various paths to success, but what that did was they failed at some things and they picked themselves up and they sort of felt their way along till they got to where they were going. I remember a lady that I used to attend her seminars on marketing. She used to write up on a board. She'd go AON and draw a line through it. And AON meant all or nothing. And she'd draw the line meaning don't live an all or nothing life. You know, sometimes we're paralyzed by a lack of information. You know, I don't have all the marketing data. I don't have everything lined up. My office isn't exactly like I mean for it to be. Well, it never is going to be. You sometimes have to go with what you've got. You know, there's that on the firing range, ready, aim. You can't just aim all day. You got to pull the trigger at some point. And wise people, successful people, figure out how to do that. Vary your approaches to achievement. It may not be one path. You may have to be trying more things than one to get there. Give that a whirl. The other thing that Maxwell talks about is bouncing back. I think it's a great idea to go to, if you've had a failure, I think it's a great idea to rehash that failure a little bit. Perhaps with your leadership team, sit down and say, okay, what do we do wrong here? How do we get ourselves into this? And think about it. But don't overdo that. Again, don't spend too much time on failures. Spend your time on opportunities. Rehash it, learn from it, push it aside, and move ahead. Some of the best business advice I ever got, investing advice, was from a guy I used to work with out in Texas, worked for actually, out in Texas. I made a little bit of an investment out there. It was one of the first ones that Vicki and I ever made. And it lost money, lost all of it, as a matter of fact. And I was kind of whining to him about it. And this is a guy that made a lot of money in investing. And he said, here's the rule about investing. You invest, you use the best data you've got to invest, and then you don't look back. And he applied that to decisions in business or anything else. And I found that to be great advice. Don't be paralyzed by fear of failure. Are so overly concerned with what happened to you before that you're paralyzed, you can't move ahead again. You know, you have a failure in business and you won't stick your neck out again because of that failure. That's a way to live in failure. Don't do that. Don't live in fear and failure like that. Bounce back. Move ahead. You know, Maxwell summarizes a summary of his book is that he says he thinks it's impossible for a person to believe that he or she is a failure and to move forward at the same time. I agree with that. You know, some of you have been downsized, let go. You've had, you know, your biggest customer has abandoned you. The market you're in has kind of faded away. Financing's been a problem. You know, you've lost a key employee. All of those things can be absolutely debilitating emotionally for you. Well, just recognize that. Recognize they're debilitating emotionally. Deal with the emotion. Go ahead and mourn a little bit if you need to. But then pick yourself up. Take a hard look at it. What did you learn from that? And then start looking ahead. Climb out of that hole and look ahead. Don't stand there and blunder around in the failure, because to do so just means you're never going to get out. Again, I think it's a great title of a great book, Failing Forward. What a great philosophy that is in life, because all of us are going to fail. So just fail forward. You know, from a company standpoint and a customer service standpoint, you know, it's very easy to give really good customer service when everything is going just right. And when you're dealing with it, you don't really know what kind of a customer service a company really has until there's a problem. And, you know, that's when you figure out what they're really made of, not while it's all going. I mean, anybody can give great customer service when everything is going well. It's when it's not going well that it matters who steps up. You're listening to Driven to Business. More to come. I'm Eddie Mayfield, back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking about learning from adversity, learning from failure even, and picking yourself up and moving ahead. You know, something you might not have thought about when you're presenting your story to somebody, let's say you're telling your life story to someone, and perhaps even in a business setting where you're presenting yourself and your company to a potential client, things of that sort. You know, something you might consider is that people do enjoy hearing success stories. You've got to be careful not to brag about it, but people do enjoy hearing stories of success. Particularly other business people enjoy hearing stories of how you got to be successful. They also enjoy hearing stories about failures. And here's what failure stories will do. It endears you to them a bit because it makes you very real. Because everybody has failures in their life. And by admitting it, it all of a sudden makes you a lot more believable and a lot more empathetic, I guess, more of a sympathetic character, someone that understands that you are that you have in fact had failures in your life. Now, you don't want to overdo it. You don't want to sit there and whine to somebody, tell them your long story about, you know, your terrible upbringing and all this, you know, and leave the room in a real down sense. But and you need to. But I would sort of sandwich it, make a sandwich. To start off with the great successes and very positive things about your company and what's happened there and so forth, and say, you know, but we have had some downsides, and then tell, just mix in a little bit of downside. What it does, that makes your success, it takes some of the edge, the arrogant edge off of your success story. It makes you a lot more believable person. You know, even many sales gurus will tell you that when you're doing a sales presentation to somebody, let's say on your product or your service, that, you know, they expect you to tell them all the good things about your product or your service, you know, and you should do that. But, you know what, there's also a great deal to be said for mixing in a little bit of a little bit of negative about your product. And, you know, you say, well, you know, our product really does really well, but, you know, it doesn't work well in wet weather or whatever, you know, whatever your whatever the downside of it is. And mix that in there a little bit and say, you know, we do really, really well in this, and this. We're not so good. We're still sort of feeling our way along or learning how to do this. Again, it makes you very believable. And in some cases, it can take an elephant out of the room if there are, particularly if it's an objection you know the customer's already going to have about you. Go ahead and admit it. Just put the elephant right out there. Just mention the elephant in the room and get it over with. It's a great way to build credibility and so forth. So in other words, success stories versus failure stories. There's actually an article in Forbes magazine by Sonia Kapadia about that. And the name of the article is Success Stories Are Great, Failure Stories Are Even Better. The title kind of caught my eye. I think it's a good title there. But, you know, but it is true. Your failure stories sort of explain, even to you, to sit down and rehash your own failure story can open up a blind spot. You know, man, we didn't see that coming. Why didn't we see that coming? Like I said, sort of doing a post-mortem after you've had a failure. And as I said before the break, any company can do a good job when things are going well. It's when they go bad, that's when you see what you're really made of. And looking at your own company and your own career and your own leadership, it's when things go rotten and you go back and look at it. That's where you determine where some weak spots are. And boy, you know, I never saw that coming. And I should have handled that a little bit differently. Not, you don't dwell on it. You don't dig yourself in a hole and get all morose about it and consider yourself a complete failure. But you do look at, you do realistically take a look at what happened and say, okay, that wasn't so good. That failure story is important, even to you. I'm not talking about what you're telling to a customer. Is important even to you. People do enjoy hearing, as I said, your failure stories, because it makes you real. And to mix in some downside of your product and service in your sales presentation, again, this has statistically been proven in a number of ways. It actually enhances your chances of getting the order more than if you just sit there and, because, you know, they're expecting you to say only good things about your product and service, right? That's what they're expecting to hear. So you catch them a little off guard when you say, you know, we've done this good. We do this well. We do this well. We do this well. We do this well. We don't do so well over here. When you say that, you break through some barriers with people because they immediately look at you as a truthful person, somebody who's not trying to pull wool over their eyes, and it helps you to get way ahead. All right, for a little bit of the time we have left, at least for a little bit, I'm going to talk about some success stories that started off as failures that I find inspiring. Perhaps you will. Start off with Colonel Sanders of the Kentucky Fried Chicken fame. I remember I was in high school in Birmingham, Alabama, when I saw the first Kentucky Fried Chicken, and we knowing about this, but you know we would go there and get what we thought was just fantastic chicken, and everybody started buying it and taking it home. And if you're around churches or clubs or so forth now, it's just amazing that if they're having a dinner. Our family reunion, I get tickled at our family reunion about this. The whole family reunion, it looks like buckets of Kentucky Fried Chicken. People go buy Kentucky Fried and buy chicken and potatoes and beans and whatever, and slaw, you know, coleslaw and all that, and bring it. It's a ubiquitous thing now, but it wasn't always that way. Harlan Sanders grew up in Indiana, and his dad died early, and he actually got stuck in the house helping his mom cook. So he learned how to cook. And that's how he developed his cooking skills. He sort of developed his entrepreneurial skills running a service station in Kentucky. And he began serving chicken inside the service station. And the chicken, I guess, became more, the chicken became a little more of an attraction than the gasoline was. So he actually opened up a restaurant next door to the service station and began doing that. And then he added a motel. And about 45 years old, they served really good food there. And about 45 years old, the governor of Kentucky dubbed him a Kentucky colonel. So he actually is a colonel. They did that. And then he began to market what he called his original recipe. And, you know, he was originally fixing chicken in an iron skillet like everybody else. But as he began to figure out that that wasn't getting it done fast enough for the crowds he was beginning to have at his restaurant, he began cooking in a pressure cooker, which was an uncommon thing at that time. And he was on a major highway that people going on vacation in Florida was on. But there was a freeway opening up, and he knew that was going to do away with most of the road traffic for that particular restaurant. So he began to look at other ways of perhaps expanding his business. And at 65 years old, he began to look for ways to franchise and grow the Kentucky Fried Chicken. And he was rejected all over the place. According to some folks that wrote his biography, he was rejected over 1,000 times. He did over 1,000 presentations and was rejected 1,000 times for trying to get someone to back a franchise for his chicken. But finally, a guy in Salt Lake City named Pete Herman took him on, and they launched the first Kentucky Fried Chicken in 1952. Again, as a guy in his 60s, he suddenly becomes this multimillionaire businessman, a guy that started off running a service station, started serving chicken, has some success at it. The freeway comes along and basically puts his restaurant out of business. And he goes around with the idea that he's got this really good chicken, but he can't talk anybody into it. And after 1,000 presentations to people, some guy decided to back it, and the rest of his history. And that is such an interesting story, isn't it, of business and how the things do that. I'm going to spend a little time now talking about that I think is one of the great success stories on earth of success. And it's the story of Honda. And I'm not sure I say his name right. Soshiro Honda, who died back in, I think, 1991, founded the Honda Motor Company. But he's the most unlikely guy to be founding a company like that. First thing, I don't think he even had a college degree. He worked with his dad. His dad was a blacksmith and had a bicycle shop, and he learned how to work and to build parts for bicycles. That was his early training. And then He went to Tokyo and basically apprenticed himself someone at a motor shop there, ended up opening up coming back to his home as a young man in his 20s, opening up an automobile repair shop, and then from there began building, figuring out how to build motorcycles. In fact, the story is that as World War II was ending, he was using the motors that ran generators in aircraft. And he was hooking them on, it ran off batteries. Of course, he was hooking them to bicycles, and that was the first motorcycles. He was making motor, and he sold, I think, like 1,000 of these things or something like that. And then he began making actual motorcycle engines, and all that was basically considered by those that knew him as to be an illiterate, an aloof, an uncultured and crude and uncouth guy, who no one thought would ever be successful in business. But yet, despite that, he built this world-class company, Honda Motor Company, which just had enormous success. A little bit about how that happened. It's kind of an interesting story to me. You know, again, he started off working on bicycles, just learning mechanical things. He was always fascinated by mechanical things. Used to, in fact, the story is, he tells the story, used to, there was an industrial plant in town, had an industrial machines, and he would talk his granddad, who, I don't know if he worked there or what, but he would talk his granddad to take him into the industrial plant so he could see the machines operating, because he was fascinated by machines, even as a kid. and he began working again in Tokyo at an automobile repair shop, and he became more and more a trusted mechanic, and he actually began working on racing cars. And when he was 17 years old, there's another guy who I'm not going to try to say his name, raced a car and won the Chairman's Trophy. It's a Japanese race. And when he made his victory round, he had the 17-year-old Honda, who was his chief mechanic, 17 years old, of a world-class race car, sitting beside him in the car. And then his fame kind of grew and began working. We'll talk more about that in the last segment here today. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. We've been talking today about learning from adversity, picking yourself up from failure, moving ahead. Right before the break, we were talking about Soshiro Honda, the founder of the Honda. You know, Honda, we look at companies like that, and we assume they've just always been successful. And he was an amazing young man with a lot of mechanical and even entrepreneurial spirit about himself, particularly got into race cars and racing motorcycles and things like that, and became very passionate about it. And it could be a great story of passion, just sheer determination and passion starting a business. But he did a couple of things that were very interesting. He began to recognize his own shortcomings. He apparently was not the greatest personnel manager in the world, and he realized it. They talked about he would throw tools at people, you know, when mistakes were made, and scream at people and all that. And he began to recognize that really wasn't the way to build a business. He saw that in himself. And he had a young man that was one of his best friends and who was a very calm demeanor and a very logical thinker in that area. And he put him in there as a CEO. And he joked later on that he never, that's back in Japan when they used the company seal to sign checks. And he said he had never even seen the company seal, that his friend handled all of that. And he credits his friend with all the success of Honda, and his friend to his credit. And I can't think of his name. I can't pronounce his name, actually. But his friend credits Honda with it. So, again, you had a great it was a great partnership. But Honda had, in the early days, they launched several products that did not fly. They came right to the edge of bankruptcy a number of times. It would have been very easy to give it up and move away. They didn't do that. And so now we begin to see. Nowadays, we look at something like Honda, and we think it's just, wow, what a great, successful company. And if you don't think about it, you just think, oh, it's just an accident. It just fell in there or something. Not at all. A lot of hard work, determination. It was overcoming an enormous amount of adversity, learning from mistakes and picking up. It's a failure to success stories, because I find them interesting. She's not one of my favorite people, but she's been very successful. The founder of the Huffington Post, Arianna Huffington. You know, she got rejected. When she first started off, she wrote a book. And she was actually kind of well known. She had she was connected in some famous circles. And I think she thought her book would really take off, but she got rejected 36 times getting it published, much to her surprise, actually. And 36 times. And the Huffington Post that she started was not a success. It got very negative reviews when it came out, but she overcame all that and made it very, very successful. And she sold it now and doesn't own it anymore. But the Huffington Post is a well known name. Now, in the blog, Bill Gates, a lot of us know him as the founder of Microsoft, and he was, but Bill Gates founded a company before Microsoft that went bankrupt. It was a company that was going to use data for various traffic flows. He was going to sort of the first look at big data. He was going to use this software and this data flow, this traffic flow data, to help municipalities plan their traffic lights and, you know, infrastructure and things like that. It never took off. It never even worked. They couldn't get the software to even work. It was a dismal failure. Completely bailed on it, and he tried to sell it, but it didn't work. But instead of just burying his head in the sand saying things are not over, it didn't stop him from exploring new opportunities. And a few years later, he formed Microsoft, and that was incredible. George Steinbrenner, who many people used to be, famous as the owner of the New York Yankees. So, you know, he bankrupted a small basketball team called the Cleveland Pipers before he bought New York Yankees. Now, the Yankees were a very successful franchise, arguably the most successful franchise in the country under him. But he bankrupted a team before he took that over. And even after he took over the Yankees, he had a lot of setbacks. and had a lot of public criticism of his manager, his controversial decisions. But he stuck with it, and he ended up building a very successful franchise again. Instead of quitting when things died, a guy that almost all of us have got kids know something about, Walt Disney. You know, Disney was fired from one of his first jobs because he was told he lacked creativity. Fired from a newspaper. They said, you're just not creative enough to work here. This is Walt Disney, Disneyland. And he formed an animation company called Laugh-O-Gram Films. He was forced to close it. It didn't make it. It bailed out. And desperate and completely out of money, he found his way to Hollywood and faced a lot more criticism even there in Hollywood. But finally, after staying with it and reexamining what he had done wrong and looking at it, he made his first few classic films, which we still look at today. And it's the Mickey Mouse thing, and it took into priority. One of the most enigmatic figures in big business to me is Steve Jobs, a guy that, you know, formed Apple, an overdriving, along with Steve Wozniak, an overdriving personality, genius probably in many ways, but almost led the company. The company grew and grew and grew and did great. It turned out Jobs was really good at growing a company, not so good at running one. And, you know, and then when he was 30 years old, his own board of directors fired him, much to his chagrin and surprise. They threw him out of the company. And he formed another company called NXET, which eventually was acquired by Apple. And then once back at Apple, they began to look at him again. He was a changed man. I've heard other interviews with this. Jobs came back to there a much more humbled and a much more changed and mature guy. And he reinvented the company's image. And, you know, and we know Apple. I think the Steve Jobs, when you're using an iPhone or anything like that, you've got to credit the creativity of Jobs, who I've often thought, you know, Jobs was building things we didn't even know we wanted. Like, who knew we wanted a camera on our phones? Who knew that? Well, apparently Jobs did. And just an amazing guy. But a guy, again, was fired. That could have been the end of him. He had a lot of money when he was fired. He could have just, settle down and been done with it. But step back from that huge setback, formed another company, built it up into something else, learned along the way, learned how to be more humble, learned how to manage people, took the reins of Apple back over and led it to its greatest years after coming back. It's a great story. And for guys like me that like chocolate candy, I love this story. Hershey. Milton Hershey started three candy companies before Hershey's, all of which bombed. That's amazing, isn't it? A guy like Hershey, this ubiquitous brand that if you've ever been up to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and you go through their plants, just that place just smells good to be there. You know, the Hershey Pop street lights on the corners and all that. It's just an amazing thing to go to. But he, again, the idea that he had founded several companies that bombed before getting there. And, you know, I love this. My wife doesn't so much. But, you know, he's credited with the idea of milk chocolate. I'm not sure exactly what milk chocolate is, but I really do like it, as opposed to, the idea of the Hershey bars. It's still just about one of my favorite candy bars to eat. It's just a straight Hershey bar. But again, and who by all accounts was a very generous man, a very good man to the people that worked for him, great for his community and everything else. But yet he had overcome having three companies bomb on him and keep this vision of making candy alive and still do it. Well, so when we get our – what we take from things like this, I think it's the idea is that when we find ourselves in adversity, we can take some inspiration from that. And although the admonition back in the New Testament that I started the program with is a little difficult, to count it all joy when you encounter various trials. And this is about, obviously, talking about our Christian faith, but the idea that to persevere through trials builds endurance. Well, I think you apply that to business as well. To persevere through trials builds endurance, and it teaches us. And just like when I talked earlier about my friend that was a trainer for the police department, if guys that have never been punched in the nose, once they get out on patrol as policemen and someone punches them, if they've never been punched, they don't know how to deal with it. And it's the same thing if we've never faced adversity or never faced any failure. We don't know how to deal with it. So that failure and adversity toughens us up. It gives us, it teaches us things that we probably won't learn any other way. So you can, I'm not suggesting you look for ways to put yourself in adversity, but when you're there, learn from it. come out of it better and stronger. And don't get discouraged, because so many people before you and me have persevered through great trials and built great businesses. You've been listening to Driven to Business. We're here every morning, and not every morning, every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock here on Atlanta's Biz 1190. I'm Eddie Mayfield. See you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.